Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Letter Lords. Bela Lugosi's back.
That was a bit of a half-assed effort, that one, Jim.
Yeah, well, it's just there to tick it off the checklist, isn't it, now?
It was.
Yeah, so here we are in March, and staggeringly, we have some letters to talk about, don't we?
We do, but first of all, who the hell are you?
Oh, yeah, sorry. I'm Jim from the Crinoid podcast.
And I'm Bob Fleming from the Proctor Who podcast.
Yes. So I didn't know who you were until you introduced yourself. So
I didn't have a clue who you were. I just thought you were some cockney swine.
Oh, dear. Yes. There was no letter page in the last month, as you may remember. There were letter pages this time and some letters worth talking about. So that's rather remarkable, isn't it?
Very, very remarkable. It feels like eons ago since we actually talked about something from a letter from the Galaxy Forum in Doctor Who magazine. Yeah, it's 5:09 March 2017. Wow, we're actually in March as well. It's weird actually talking in the actual month of the magazine because I don't think we've done that yet.
I don't think we have, but the new one's just arrived. So
yeah, mine has too.
We're still playing catch up.
Straight through the door.
Yes, marvellous. Well, should we get stuck in then?
Let's do it.
Okay, the first letter is from Eleanor Alexander from Adelaide. She says, "G'day there." I won't do the accent.
Of course she says "G'day there." That's what they all say, isn't it, in Australia, obviously.
Yes, I'd be shocked and horrified if they didn't. Anyway, she says, "Thanks very much, not to us, of course, but to DWM, for the trip down memory lane, courtesy of Fury from the Deep's Missing in Action in DWM 506. I remember watching it on the ABC, either when it first screened in Australia or when we had the glorious treat of daily Troughton and Pertwee repeats in the school holidays." God, we never got that, did we, Bob?
No, we did not.
Mum and Dad were avid science fiction fans and told us they had bought their first TV in 1963 to watch Doctor Who. That's a commitment. My parents must have cursed later, though, because my sister and I refused to touch or walk on seaweed and sea foam at the beach, instead sticking to the safer sandy bits.
That's awesome.
Seaside family walks took on another dimension for a while, and were certainly a lot slower as we zigged and zagged along. What a fantastic creature, and what an impact. For the record, we're okay with seaweed nowadays.
Yeah.
Nearly 50 years on, it's great to see that the Grand Doctor Who tradition of turning the everyday into the extraordinary continues. I can't wait to discover the horror behind creaky floorboards this year.
So, real things that scare you from Doctor Who, eh? Is that really what this person's saying?
I think she is, and seaweed did it for her.
I'm trying to think of something that actually has scared me from Doctor Who. Because I started really watching Doctor Who on telly. Peter Davison, Colin Baker, Sylvester McCoy. The Tetraps scared the hell out of me, and which led on to Cave scaring me as well. Because Revenge of the Cybermen was one of the early VHS releases.
Oh, yeah.
And I loved caving. I did love caving as a kid. There's a place called Stump Cross Cavins up near us at North.
Isn't it on the League of Gentlemen?
Yes, it is.
Stump
yeah.
Old Cavins.
Well, it is, yeah, because he's from Darlington, isn't he? Yes. We're all from the North East, the League of Gentlemen boys.
Yeah.
So obviously, they'll have been taken on a school trip, as we all did, 37 times a year to Stump Cross Cavins. But yeah, I mean, I loved caves, but there was always that, I remember just that sort of slight fear of them. And that would be coming, yeah, like I say, from the Tetraps or Time in the Rani of all things. And definitely Revenge of the Cybermen a little bit for me. But yeah, I think I always find it exciting. I've always found Doctor Who exciting. The only time, I think I've mentioned on the podcast before, I found it genuinely terrifying, and it's terribly pathetic of me, was when the Sontarans appeared in The Invasion of Time. That is the only time I've genuinely been scared in Doctor Who, and I was about 23, I think, when I watched it as well. I probably wasn't that old. But, you know, I wasn't young. But actual real things. I mean, I think if I'd have seen Blink when I was a kid, I think that would definitely have, you know, scared. I'd have been scared of statues and things like that. But yeah, I think caves. And that comes from Time of the Rani, like I said, Revenge of the Cybermen.
Yeah, it's interesting you should say that a kind of like an environment is more scary, because I think that was the case with me when I was a child. So do you remember Sontaran Experiment?
It was, yes, on the moors.
Shot on Dartmoor, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Any of those kind of sort of heathery moors, I used to be a little bit worried about.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah. I remember watching Sontaran Experiment in. I think I'd do that as well. But rather than being scared, especially when I was definitely younger, was thinking I'm in the adventure. Does that make sense? So when I did go on the moors, or Muirs, as you say up north, definitely Sontaran experiment and things like that sprang to mind. Mm. And every time I went in a, not that I went in a quarry or anything like that, do you know what I mean? But that sort of environment, you know, that was every alien planet ever been in classic Doctor Who. But yeah, I definitely associated environments with being in an adventure with Doctor Who in my play mind, do you know what I mean? But not necessarily fearful.
Yeah, exactly the same. The woods was another thing. You know, getting in the woods, it always reminds me of like the scenes from the Zygons.
Yeah.
You know, creeping around, hiding behind trees and stuff. And there was several places near me that were like, you know, inside the Matrix in Deadly Assassin.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of scrubland sort of stuff. Kind of a quarry, isn't it? But kind of overgrown as well.
Yeah, like a rocky kind of
rural
area kind of thing.
Yeah, there was a few of those near me. So, you know, those kind of things, you wonder what'd be coming around the corner, you know?
Yeah.
A man in a gas mask or something like that.
Or a tramp with his in his hand. When you try to look for his rag mags.
Yeah, discarding a jazz mag.
And yes. only people over a certain age will possibly understand what I just said then. Younger people thinking, what a weirdo he is, or more so than usual.
Yes, people don't leave websites lying around these days. So most people get that kind of entertainment these days.
Apologies, Jim.
That's fine. But on the subject of Deadly Assassin, of course, clowns. Do you remember that bit when he dusts away the ground?
Oh, God, yeah. But the clowns from Great Show in the Galaxy as well.
Well, that's the other thing. It kind of reinforced it.
Yes.
We had that kind of cackling clown, didn't it? It's absolutely surreal.
That was bizarre, yeah.
Deadly Assassin. It's so weird that it scared the life out of me. And then those super creepy clowns in Great Show and the Galaxy kind of reinforced it. I was a lot older by then. And, you know, yeah, I kind of appreciate this sort of creepiness, but I wasn't particularly scared by them. But, you know, it's a fear that a lot of people have.
But rightly so, because there's nothing funny about a clown. It is just weirdly... They're just weird. I get slapstick humour and things like that, don't get me wrong, but they just look creepy. I'm not scared of clowns. I mean, if a clown came near me, I'd probably punch it in the face. But that's not through fear. Just do me in. And I don't think they're funny. I don't think I ever went to a circus as a child either, so that's probably why. But yeah, they just look weird and freaky. And when they're a bit sinister, I can see why people are scared of them. But yeah, a little tip for everyone, just punch him in the face.
Yeah, well, there was a spate of clowns jumping out on people, wasn't there?
Yes, there was. I was disappointed I didn't get one. I really wanted to punch one in the face.
Yeah, I didn't get one either. I was ready to take one out, but it never happened.
Oh, yeah. I was born ready, Jim. Born ready.
You're a natural-born clown killer.
I was absolutely out of shit my pants and ran away, pleaded for my life. Oh, please don't hurt me, Mr. Clown. I'm dying, kind of thing.
I'll give you a bucket of glitter.
Yeah. Oh, but no, I'd punch me at first, obviously. You know what I mean?
Yeah, quite. Of course you would, and so would I. Well, maybe not. But yeah, but that was it. Yeah, things like that kind of play on sort of everyday fear. Spiders, of course, Planet of the Spiders. You know, anyone who wasn't keen on spiders would not have liked that one. They did scare me when I was younger. I don't have any problem with spiders now, but...
Oh, I'm terrified. Terrified. And it's not because of... Planet of the Spiders, because if I saw them spiders, I'd probably laugh a little bit. I think when I was a kid, I was trying to look for shit spiders and I couldn't find any. But yeah, I've just genuinely always been fearful of spiders. It's because they're so alien, I suppose. The having eight legs.
Too many legs,
loads of eyes. You know, I'm not so bad with like little sort of ones in the UK, but if I saw a tarantula, I would absolutely, I'd die with fear. So yeah, spiders scare me, but not because of Doctor Who, just because they're scary little bastards.
Mm. But that's another example of the everyday has been blown out before. Well, you get that in the 50s, didn't you? Like through some nuclear accident, you know, something in the environment will get bigger. And that was a staple of most 50s B-movies, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that in Planet of the Spiders. Ventriloquist Dummies
always
freaked
spooky,
me out a little bit. Mr. Sin, of course, from Talents of Wang Chiang. You know, if I had a nascent fear of ventriloquist dummies, Mr. Sin's certainly made it a lot worse.
Confirmed Jim Cameron scared of Orville. The bird who can't fly.
Oh, that finished me off, yeah. I couldn't watch Top of the Pops when he was on. Might have been something to do with Keith Harris's bubble perm. But I don't know.
And what was that monkey thing called?
Monkey, I believe he was called.
Was it actually just called Monkey? Very inventive.
A stunning piece of creativity.
I ate that duck.
He used to sniff to me regularly. He had a coke habit.
Massive coke habit. And because I had a Keith Harris.
Yeah, he's well known in show business, but never made it to screen. Think about what would have terrified me had I been old enough was the Orton stories, the two Pertwee Orton stories.
Yes.
And I know my brother was very wary of shop dummies or mannequins after watching Beard from Space. But can you imagine what it'd be like, you know, with daffodils that squirted plastic with your face and armchairs that swallowed you up and toys attacked you?
I think particularly the first one, I mean, I can only look at it with adult eyes, so a Spear from Space, because it's a bit more sort of gritty and not as daft. I think Terry the Autons, they went a bit overboard with it.
Yeah.
But the whole, I think, thing of mannequins or dummies or whatever coming alive, that in itself is amazingly scary. And then you can put it onto all the things that are plastic. But I think because you didn't see so much, you know, particularly in Pertwee's first season, because they're conscious of budget, I think definitely Spirit from Space is why it was in their favour, wasn't it? The look of it, the sort of feel of that adventure. Whereas Terror of the Autons is good, and it is spooky and scary. And I imagine if they had today's budget doing this, a similar thing, you know, that would be... It's kind of like Magneto, obviously the opposite of Magneto. You know what I mean? Yeah. You can do anything with metal, so these guys can do anything with plastic, and plastic is literally everywhere. You look around where you are right now, it's everywhere. I mean, the headphones I'm wearing, they could strangle me to death.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, so of course there was a CSO Kitchen, which of course was ahead of its time.
There was.
But on that subject, I mean, is it a good thing to make everyday things scary, or is it irresponsible?
Well, no, because it gives you a buy-in, doesn't it? You know, if it's something completely alien, then you can't associate with it, and then therefore you can't get on board with the fear of it. Does that make sense?
Well, it does. It's the old thing that Russell T. Davies used to say, you know, the people on the planet Zog being attacked by the Zogons or whatever it was he said, you know, there's nothing to relate to. It's like why things like the Web Planet don't really work, because it's all so far removed from reality and there aren't any humans in it apart from the TARDIS team that, you know, people can't really buy into it.
Yeah, it's got to be something that you associate with. Yeah. It always works better, which is why Blink was so brilliant, which is why the Autons are so brilliant, which is why the Cybermen are so brilliant, because at the end of the day, they're humans that have been cyberized. And they always work really well, I think, them.
They do. More of them later, actually, in this episode.
Oh, Telos Cybermen.
Yes.
They look awesome, because they are awesome. They are the creepiest Cybermen by a country mile.
Mondo Cybermen.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes. But yeah, just to tie this one off, I think, you know, nothing has like haunted me to this day from early stuff, but I think what it does do is actually makes you interested in certain subjects. You know, it makes walks around various places more enjoyable if you think you're in a Doctor Who adventure, for one thing, like we described. But I also, you know, I got interested in sort of Victoriana from Talons of Wang Chiang, Egyptology from Pyramids of Mars, history in general from anything that was set in history, dinosaurs, lighthouses, all sorts are more interesting because you've seen something you loved that was about them.
Yeah, well, I think for me personally, everything I know about science and history is from Doctor Who.
A lot of it is with me.
Because literally everything, Jim. I'm not even lying. Because I did go to school, but I didn't try very hard. So when I occasionally sound clever with a historical fact or scientific fact, it's from Doctor Who.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah.
Teaching us like some sort of intergalactic Johnny Ball.
Yeah. The only thing that scars my mind and stays with me, I think, is Colin Baker's coat. But apart from that, I'm okay with all of it, I think.
I think we've all had counselling after that coat, haven't we?
Yes.
Praying to be colourblind.
Oh, man. Bless him. Bless him. Right. So, should we move on to our next letter? It's not our letter, obviously. It's the Doctor Who magazine's letter. We're just reading them out.
We don't write in our own letters when we haven't got any to talk about. Not yet.
This is Ewan Morgan from Aberdeen, where Sarah Jane got dropped off. See what I did there? Bit of Doctor Who knowledge, Jim.
Nice.
I read with fascination in the DWM yearbook 2017 about Toby Hayduck's joy at bumping into Jackie Lane on a Manchester to London train. Since 2011, I've been determinedly racing up and down the country trying to meet and be photographed with as many surviving who regulars as possible. I've slept in the car in Country Lane for Gene Marsh, a supermarket car park for Maureen O'Brien. Ewan, you are bad.
To the police now.
And scary. I've had 3 points put on my car licence in Cardiff. For John Levine driving at 35 miles an hour in a 30 mile an hour zone. Jackie Lane is 10th Planet episode 4, rarity that we all crave. He's a nutter. She's done one. I didn't actually read this, Jim, until I've started reading it. And this is in turn. I'm pleased I didn't, because this is nice and shocking. She's done one convention and a couple of other events. And over the years, we've all respected her privacy. Have we, Ewan? I don't even... Anyway.
I'm not sure he is.
I'm tempted to leave my job. My wife, my 6 months... and child for 6 months while I travel up and down the London to Manchester rail lines. For that period, of course not. Good. The thought had never crossed my mind.
And he's prepared to put this in print.
Confirm nutter, Ewan Morgan from Aberdeen. I really hope you're listening. That is brilliant. I mean, I'm going to take that as sarcasm, otherwise we'd have to ring the police. Thank you, Ewan.
Apparently after a restraining order, he can't be within 2 miles of Matthew Waterhouse.
Oh my God, I wouldn't want to put on him for me. So yeah, bumping into celebrities. I mean, it's got to be bumping in, Jim, because I've only ever met Doctor Who celebrities at conventions, so that doesn't kind of count. My friend bumped into Fraser Hines at a track day, not about a year ago, actually. Yeah, he was doing a track day. Fraser Hines was there with his, what he perceived to be daughter, actually his girlfriend. And he was lovely. He had to give him loads of time. Like he was talking to him about Big Finish and the voice, his Patrick Troughton voice. He even did his Patrick Troughton voice for my friend.
On request, wow.
So that's my only sort of story of bumping into a Doctor Who celebrity. I mean, obviously I've interviewed Andrew Cartmell and Toby Hurdock, Joe Lidster, people like that, but that's all part of the work, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I've never done any of that, but I enjoyed your interviews. Well, I have bumped into a few myself, you know, outside of organised events.
Yeah?
I literally bumped into John Ringham, who was...
John Ringham?
Plotoxel from the Aztecs, and he was in...
oh, right, yeah.
Colony in Space, wasn't he, I think. I was getting off a tube, and he was getting on the same tube carriage, and we literally bumped into each other. He was very polite. And
did you recognise him? Like,
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
Not from that, really, because he used to be Penny's dad in Just Good Friends. Do you remember that?
No.
You're too young, probably. It was a Paul Nicholas, Jan Francis sitcom.
Right.
Written by the boat who did Only Fools and Horses. Just
John Sullivan. Yeah.
John Sullivan, yeah. And he was her dad. So I recognised him instantly from that and then remembered afterwards that he was in Doctor Who as well.
Amazing.
Yes, I also was in a carriage as Donald Sumpter walked past. He of the Sea Devils and the latest Rassilon.
Oh, all right. Yeah.
Yeah, of course he wasn't. He had done the Sea Devils but hadn't done Rassilon at that point. But I nearly spoke to him, but that wasn't about Doctor Who. It was because I'd just seen him do... something, the name forgets me, it's a child's name. He played a kind of like a one-off drama thing where he'd lost his, you know, his young daughter had died. And he was absolutely amazing in it. And I'd only seen it a couple of weeks earlier and I wanted to stop him and just kind of thank him for his performance. But, you know, I bottled out, to be honest. But I realised he had been in Doctor Who afterwards.
Did you talk to the other one, the first one you met, John?
No, well, these things, when you bump into someone, you're not expecting it, so... Yeah, it doesn't occur to me. Also, I'm a bit too sort of shy and polite to bother them as well. So,
yeah.
But when you're at a doctor convention, you might gird your loins and go over and talk to one of them. But when you bump into them, it all happens too quickly. I used to live in Tunbridge Wells, and Tom Baker used to live there. Maybe he still does. So I used to see him wandering around with his wife. I have met him in person, as I said on a previous edition of this.
Yes.
But I used to see him wandering around, which is quite surreal. And speaking of the clowns from Greatest Show in the Galaxy, I was in a pub gardening a pub at Greenwich one day, and Ian Reddington, the chief clown, was on the table next to
him. Oh, what? He's proper famous anyway, isn't he?
Mm.
He was
Tricky Dicky.
He's sinister. And he's a great actor, like, he's awesome.
Yeah, Tricky Dicky in cool. EastEnders, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, I think he'd probably just about finished that then, but he's instantly recognisable. He's a very recognisable face.
Yeah.
But again, I didn't go and bother him. He had lots of people with him, so...
Ah, cool.
I just noticed him from afar, as I did with David Tennant.
What?
Yeah, just before he'd been cast, and we all knew he was going to be in the show, but it was before Christmas Invasion had been shown, but we knew he was coming. Yeah, I went to a League of Gentlemen live show. They used to go to the theatres every now and then and do a live show, and he was about five seats away from me.
Class.
And that's it though, I think. But it was entertaining to see these people outside of their natural habitat.
You see, all this occurred in London town, didn't it?
It did. Well, most of it, yeah.
And I'm not. Yeah, I've been to London on many occasions. I've never seen a celebrity though. But up north, you get stuff like I bumped into the Chuckle Brothers, and Cannon and Ball, things like that. You don't really bump into sort of
Les Dawson.
You don't sort of bump into Doctor Who celebrities and things like that. So that's pretty awesome.
You might now if they do move to Manchester. You certainly will.
Well, Manchester's a totally different place. You see, you cockneys, you don't understand the north.
No, I know you're not very near Manchester, but at least it is up north, or it is in my opinion.
But yeah, Chuckle Brothers bumped into them in a Little Chef in Darlington when they were doing the Civic Theatre in a pantomime. I was only little. That was pretty cool. But I tell you what you were saying before, just to touch on this celebrity thing briefly. It's not Doctor Who related, but cut a long story short, I ended up in a VIP lounge in London.
Nice.
There's loads of people there. One person in particular that was there was a guy called Noel Gallagher. Now, Noel Gallagher is my biggest musical hero, really.
Oh, cool.
He was the guy that sort of said, you can get your hair cut, you don't have to know loads of chords to write a song, and it's not that hard, and you can like football and wear nice clothes. Before that, it was all about being as complicated as possible, having long hair and being into prog and all that kind of stuff, which I am as well.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah. He did change things.
Yeah, and he sort of changed my life. So he was there, and I was with a few of my friends, and there's loads of other celebrities there. It was a VIP lounge, and I thought, you know what? I'm never going to get the opportunity to speak to Noel Gallagher ever again in my life. So I just walked up to him. I went, hiya, I'm Bob. And he went, I'm Noel. Shook his hand. And I spoke to him for about 45 minutes, having a pint.
Wow.
Because I just thought, what's the worst going to happen? He's going to ignore me.
Fox to Oscar is the worst going to happen.
Well, yeah, exactly, yeah. But he was awesome. He was lovely. He was brilliant. But like I say, if it was a VIP lounge, so he didn't know who I was, I could have been someone on up and coming or whatever, and it's all very much business in it, and socializing and networking and all that. But yeah, he was lovely, and that was very brave. And my other brave celebrity moment was with Sylvester McCoy, which is Doctor Who related, because in 1994 I met him at Stockton Dimensions Convention when I was 13, maybe. No, I'd been a bit older than that. No, that 1992 was 13. And back then, conventions, you could pretty much, it was all access. You could take pictures, could be taken for free. You could speak to them for free. You got autographs for free.
Good old days.
Yeah, since it's come back, obviously you get charged £10 for a lump of sugar.
To be in the same room, isn't
it? Yeah, and all that. And fair enough, whatever. But it was probably about 6 years ago, maybe. And I had the picture I had taken with me with Sylvester McCoy when I was 13. And at the end of this coffee, we had to pay £10. Everyone had to pay £10 for this coffee with him and Lisa Bowerman. Mm. And I said to him, look, can I show you something? He was like, yeah, of course. And I said, this is me and you in 1992, and I'd like to recreate it, the picture from now and then. Mm. Immediately, one of the stewards or whatever, the organisers, came up and tried to stop all this. No, you can't, you've got to pay £20. Bless him, Sylvester McCoy went, no, he doesn't. He doesn't at all. He's going to have this picture with me now, because that is awesome. That's brilliant. And Lisa was like, oh, that's class. So I literally, we did two pictures. There was one of me, because I was smaller than him when I was 13. So it wasn't me bending down, because he's really short. And then did one just to me and him together. And he was brilliant. Mm-hmm. That was class. I'd love that, because the steward looked absolutely ashamed. So yeah, that's my sort of celebrity thing. But yeah, I'd love to bump in. But I'm terrible with celebrities. I met loads, and I don't care. I'll just talk to them. And sometimes I get on quite well. Lisa Riley, Phil Tufnell, Denise Van Outen, in the Hilton in Newcastle, because they were doing Dancing on Ice up there. I sat around just talking. I'm having beers and that. They were absolutely leathered-like. I just think you've got to... It's only going to happen once, and it's an opportunity. Just, see, if you're not going into and being aggressive and just, say hello.
Yeah.
Worst case, they tell you to get lost. Best case is you get a picture in a bit of time with him. It's ace. Yeah, it's worth doing.
Well, I remember one time when me and Martin, actually, from the Crinoid podcast, we were in a pub in London, not the East End, but most of the EastEnders cast came in for a few beers.
Wow.
And we had a chat with most of them.
Class.
Yeah, because, you know, we're fairly leathered by then, so my inhibitions were down, so I just went over to... I spent ages talking to Big Mo. Do you remember?
Yeah. I bet she was really sound.
She was, yeah. Yeah. I think she thought I didn't know who she was because I was, you know, just banging on.
Yeah.
So she kept dropping in little EastEnders remarks.
Oh, that's class.
Perfectly well who she was. But
Yeah, no, it's a good thing. And to be fair, most celebrities, quite a lot of them, are all right. And it's worth saying hello to. If they don't want to talk to you, back off, Ewan. If they do, cool. You can have a bit of a chat with them. I mean, when I approach people for interviews and stuff, with Proc 2, not that I've done them for a while, they're brilliant. Doctor Who people are brilliant. All of them are brilliant. I can't think of anyone, you know, personally that I've seen from all of the days and hours of Doctor Who, watched documentaries, obviously Doctor Who itself, speaking to them, interviewing them. It's an awesome community. Got to conventions. They're all brilliant. They're all lovely. They're all friendly. And that's not just the cast and production team behind Doctor Who. Pretty much everyone, Jim. And, you know, since I got into the podcasting world, I've met you. You know, it's such a welcoming community, not just podcasting world, but Doctor Who in general. It's brilliant. Because I'll tell you why. Because we were bullied for liking Doctor Who, or I was, and I know many people were, when it was a classic series and a bit of a joke.
Oh, yeah, I'd certainly had the piss taken out of me.
Massively. Not bully, but the piss taken out of you. To the point where you didn't really admit you were a Doctor Who fan. And now it's cool. It's cool to be a Doctor Who fan now. And I think that's why there's this sort of massive bond. And I think sometimes you test people as well. Like, I remember sitting down, in fact, it was a friend who met Fraser Hines. Never met him, just sat in a pub, and someone mentioned something about Doctor Who. And he went, oh, I love Doctor Who. It's like, do you though? And I always do a little test. And to do, are you classic or, you know, are you proper Doctor Who classic or new? Because, I mean, New Who's been going 10 years, hasn't it? Any new stuff that only a classic Who fan would know. And did a marvellous impression of Patrick Troughton.
Did you ask who did insect movement for the web planet?
No, it's like one of the bloody questions out of Mark's book on Prog to Who that I never get right. But no, it's just stuff like, but he started talking about Big Finish and all that as well. So you know that he's, you know, we had a little like Doctor Who off. I won, of course, which is unusual. But yeah, so it's weird. That's what I love about the Doctor Who community is it's welcoming. But, you know, if you, I'll test you. What am I saying? Shut up, Bobby Dickhead.
I bumped into someone at a wedding the other day. You know, I'd never met before, and the groom knew I did a Doctor Who podcast. He mentioned that to his friend, who he knew also liked Doctor Who. We had quite a long chat. Yeah, I got a completely new set of opinions about Doctor Who from a person. It's interesting, isn't it?
It's brilliant.
Everyone's got something different to say. No one ever says all the same things.
Yeah, like I love speaking to my auntie Margaret. She's, you know, 60-odd. So she's always quite liked Doctor Who. She loved it when it came back. She loved David Tennant, and she hates the Matt Smith and Moffat era. She tries to get back on board. It's not like she didn't try. She tried, but she just didn't like it. And, you know, like you say, it's just brilliant speaking to people of all... like, people that are 21. They've grown up with Doctor Who being on telly.
Yeah.
And they never really got back into the classic and stuff like that. I just think it's just an amazing, amazing world, and that's why we love it so.
Yeah, certainly is. Amen to that.
Did we go off topic there, Jim? Yes, we did.
As always.
A letter. This one's not forgotten, from Ingrid Warren, and it's an email. I just wanted to congratulate everyone involved in DWM 507's comic strip, Be Forgot. As someone who's experienced mental health problems, I find it useful to see representations of the subjects in popular culture. The comic was fantastic and very moving. Mental health and Doctor Who.
Yeah, just for some context here, a couple of issues back there, I think it was a Christmas issue, was it? It may not have been, but around that time, there was just a one-off comic strip about someone with mental issues who was seeing monsters. And, you know, I think he kind of received help at the end and it was all sorted out. But, yeah, it was quite an unusual topic. And, you know, throughout the years of Doctor Who, mental illness is... other than a very sort of cursory level of, you know, mad scientists, has very rarely been addressed, I think.
Well, it's a difficult one. And I can come at this from, you know, I mean, I speak quite openly about it nowadays. I mean, I suffer from, or have suffered from, very bad depression, anxiety, and all that, you know.
Okay.
And I never used to want to talk about it because it was had a very much a stigma to it, which, you know, I've definitely overcome that stigma. I think people in general are sort of appreciating mental health for what it is.
Yeah, I think the barriers are kind of falling, aren't they, now? And people are prepared to talk about it, and much healthier as a result, isn't it?
And understanding it more as well. Mm. I mean, from my point of view, I've definitely touched on this before. Doctor Who has, I'm going to say, helped me and my sort of depression particularly. And I think it maybe does with other people as well. It's such a fantastical world that it takes you in and not distracts you, but it's a weird one because, without going on about it, I'm just going to touch on it. Depression, it's weird. It's not, I'm sad. And it obviously affects people in different ways. It's you don't feel anything. So that's the best way I can describe it. So, for example, I fall out of love with music. I just don't feel anything for music. I don't feel anything for sometimes people and things like that. It's a difficult one, but Doctor Who somehow has always sort of helped me. I've always felt something. Does that make sense? It's a really bizarre thing. But I think for Doctor Who as a show, I think occasionally it could definitely look at characters sensitively with mental health problems. And I think the Doctor himself has a massive, if he was human, he'd have massive mental problems. He'd be a psychiatrist's dream, really. He's got it all, this sort of ego needing to be filled, the anxiety, then the bravery. He's completely bipolar, for one thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just think if you sort of really focus on it, being there, I think that's maybe whether Doctor Who has done it subconsciously or not at all. In my mind, there's always something there that I can associate from suffering with mental health. But I don't think that maybe that's because I'm just seeing it there. But I think when he does it intentionally, it's very rare. And I think something like you've got to do it very rarely intentionally because it's an entertainment show. But when they did Vincent the Doctor, which I know you mentioned before, when we were talking about what we're doing, that was a brilliant portrayal, beautiful portrayal of someone suffering from mental health, and in a very positive kind. You know, positive kind of way. You know, with the ending and things like that.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was an excellent and kind of sensitive portrayal. One of our regular listeners in the Carino podcast is a mental health nurse, and he wasn't that impressed with it. I need to kind of talk to him more about why he wasn't impressed with it, but I don't think he thought the depiction was that good. But I mean, I think on a superficial level, it kind of raises awareness, perhaps, of those kind of issues. And the general lesson, I think, is just if someone's got mental health problems someone in your life has them, you just have to kind of be there for them. Don't try and, I don't know, don't try and tell them what to do, but just be there.
Be there, yeah.
For whatever they cope with it, you need to be there to facilitate that in any way you can, but you need to be perhaps more passive than trying to say, you know, cheer up, you know, look at your life, it's really good. What are you depressed about? You shouldn't be depressed because of this, because that's not how it works, is it?
Not at all. And, you know, people do that, bless them, but again, it goes over your head because you just don't feel anything for what they're saying. You know, don't be wrong, people have been there for me, absolutely. But I think the one thing that always gets me somewhere near back to sanity is definitely Doctor Who, which is why I love it and adore the programme.
Is it the escape element or is it something completely more abstract than that?
I definitely think it's the escape element. Like I say, it's a weird one. You don't feel anything. But I think it's maybe because of Doctor Who. I can never remember not loving Doctor Who. So I don't know if that emotion's it. I mean, it's hard to psychoanalyse, to be honest, Jim, but it's just it's always been there for me.
It's never let you down.
Yeah, and it's maybe, well, God, Jesus Christ.
Well, Nightmare and Silver aside.
But yeah, it's I think that's probably the best way to put it. It's always been there for me. It's something that, yeah, from my first memories really, that I've adored and loved, and it's helped, yeah, definitely helped me.
Well, maybe it's a kind of, it's a universe to retreat to for a little while, perhaps. I don't know. I don't know nothing about the subject, so.
Yeah, well, it's I think for me, like I say, being a sufferer, I pick up all sorts in Doctor Who, you know, to do with my personal sort of illness or whatever. And I think, without a doubt, the Doctor is a nutter, to be honest with you. And I see so much of a, like I say, if he was human, he'd be a psychologist, wet dream, really. which I find quite fascinating, but he holds it all together. Do you see what I mean?
Interesting. Yeah, he does. It's interesting in New Who, certainly, you know, he's racked with self-doubt, isn't he, on many occasions.
Constantly, am I a good man, am I this, am I that? And that's what someone that suffers from the anxiety issues and things like that, brave face. I mean, God, I have to go out in front of people and sing and be happy, entertaining. And I can do all that. That's absolutely fine. And I think definitely with the new series of Doctor Who, that's what he does. And I kind of get that suffering. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
But yeah, this is a right laugh, isn't it, Jim?
keep it light.
But no, I think it's something that for me personally has always been there, and it's a good thing, and I do associate a lot of things with it, whether they're sort of obvious or not.
Well, I mean, let's just pick off a couple of examples of it. I mean, after this, it seems a bit trivial, but...
No, it's absolutely fine. Go for it.
But, I mean, one of the things that stands out for me is Tommy in Planet of the Spiders, who, you know, clearly appears to have learning difficulties. I don't think this is very sensitively handled at all, because, you know, this alien crystal suddenly makes him lose his West Country accent and starts reading poetry and stuff, doesn't he? And then Sarah Jane Smith says... Tommy, you're normal.
But I think it's very much of the time. You know, that's... I think it, particularly 70s and 80s or whatever, well, all that sort of era, the TV, they made it very obvious. So he's a Chinaman. Of course he talk like that. Do you see what I mean? And things like that, they had to make it completely obvious, I think, for the public to realise that he's mentally not quite with us. And then suddenly, yes, he's reading poetry and he's dead posh. It's completely obvious, and he's normal now. Yeah, but I know exactly what you mean. But put in the context, I think back then they had to make it very obvious, really.
Yeah, and I suppose if you're caught off guard in the 70s, you might say you're normal and so on.
Exactly. And Sarah Jane's lovely as well, so.
Yeah, I mean, she can say what she likes pretty much, can't she? Other examples, I mean, it's slightly more abstract, is the robophobia that Poole has in Robots of Death.
But that's brilliantly done, I think. That's in fact, going back to scary moments in Doctor Who, that blood on the hand.
Oh, dear. And blood and something else. It looks like a lump of something on his hand, doesn't it?
And him, I don't know, I can't remember the actor's name, but wow, it's such a brilliant performance, and that's why I think Robots of Death is up there. It's definitely the casting. There's a fantastic casting there. But that really struck a chord with me. I definitely remember that.
Yeah, it's kind of... The way he just disintegrates it seems to be very well done. I mean, I don't know how true to life that is, but then this is a slightly out-of-real-life situation, isn't it, on this robot run and sand miner.
Absolutely, yeah.
But, that certainly jumps out. And I guess perhaps the biggest and perhaps the best was Hindle in Kinder.
Yes.
He kind of disintegrates and, you know, he's in a very dangerous situation because he's left in command of the base, isn't he?
Well, you've got... In Ghostlight, what's his name? The guy that plays the explorer dude. So, in fact, it's all a bit mental in Ghostlight, isn't it? Let's be honest. It's all a bit crazy.
Yeah, I've forgotten him, but yeah, he's just one insane thing in an insane story, isn't he?
But I think particularly during Sylvester McCoy's era, back end of the 80s, it was probably more of a thing that people were willing to write about. And I think, I mean, that was one off the top of my head. I think Survival, I mean, pretty much the final season of McCoy is about Ace's issues.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are definitely related to a relationship with the parents, which has caused her to be rebellious and all this kind of thing. I think Cartmel, definitely the last season. It's something I think that's definitely within back end of 80s Who. Not obviously, but it's something that... I think it's exploring actual characters' personal... lives and in anyone's personal life, there's issues, be it mental or otherwise.
Yeah.
That it only started to develop into the late 80s and obviously definitely into the new series, without a doubt. Yeah, and it's part and parcel of, you know, a lot of people's personality.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I think, as Doctor Who got more modern, you know, people were prepared to tackle that kind of stuff, weren't they? So.
Exactly, and it should need tackling.
Yeah, if it helps people, then, go right ahead, see more of it.
I think it's, like I said, I would never... I've spoken about my, you know, personal issues with depression, but I have no stigma attached to it anymore, which I think is basically due to things like, not just Doctor Who, but things like that, that sort of bring it out into the public arena and educate people about it as well, which is why I'm more than happy to talk about it.
Well, that's good. I mean, as a society, we're obviously getting somewhere, aren't we?
Exactly. And that does help, I can assure you that.
Oh, excellent. That's good.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's step away from the letters for a second, because we had a bit of, well, not exactly news, but not exactly rumour, but the fact is that on the subject of the new Doctor, betting has been suspended on Chris Marshall, who people might remember from My Family and Death in Paradise more recently. He's just left Death in Paradise, hasn't he?
And, he has.
People are kind of putting two and two together and making four or five, depending on, what the truth of the matter is. I mean, to suspend the betting doesn't necessarily mean the betting companies know anything. It's just there's too many people betting on him.
Exactly, yeah.
They don't want to run on the funds or whatever. So we can't take anything from that. But let's imagine he has been cast. What would you think?
Well, when his name was put out there, before bending was bending,
bending is prohibited.
Before betting was stopped, I thought, yeah, he'd be a good shout. I mean, he wouldn't be my favourite candidate for the role, but you know, I like him. I loved him in My Family. I really enjoyed My Family.
I think he was the best thing in it.
Yeah, definitely. And I've seen him do more serious stuff as well, and he's pretty killing that. I do think he has his, what's the word, like Martin Freeman, his sort of persona in there a lot. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I think he's a likeable guy. And I could see him being a good, crazy Doctor Who. And he's tall.
He's very tall, yeah.
Which I quite like that. We've not really had a full-on tall, gangly Doctor Who.
Not for a while, yeah.
I don't know why that's a prerequisite of being Doctor Who, but it's about, yeah, now we need a big, gangly Doctor Who.
Well, John Pertwee and Tom Baker were tall, weren't they?
So that's what he kind of would maybe remind me of, that kind of, but I would be open to. I think he's very good.
Well, I think if you'd asked me a couple of months ago, I might have gone, oh, blimey, no thanks. But I did actually catch one of his episodes of Death in Paradise, and I thought he was quite an interesting character in there. And he's, I've always thought he's quite a good actor. He's got excellent comic timing, which I think is important for Doctor Who.
Oh, very much so, yeah.
Yeah, and I have seen him do serious stuff, and he's good. He looks quite odd.
Yes, that's the other thing as well, yeah.
Which kind of helps, but I mean, I can't talk myself, but I mean, I don't know. If people want a kind of fanciful doctor like David Tennant, I don't know if he fits the bill or not, but he certainly...
Yeah, but I think David Tennant wasn't necessarily... Or Matt Smith, they weren't your stereotypical...
Yeah, he's more like a Matt Smith, isn't he? Yeah.
You know, dudes, but I think it's the part that gets the, you know, gets the ladies and gentlemen going, you know, for fancying them or whatever. He's not an ugly dude. You know, he's quite youngish and strappy. He's probably definitely the right age for playing the Doctor,
yeah.
I think, of what they're looking for, maybe.
But I found his portrayal was quite quirky, and, you know, he's kind of a detective, isn't he? And I thought he did very well, and I was kind of watching that before any of this came up, actually.
Yeah.
I was watching that and thinking, yeah, I wonder what he'd be like as the Doctor.
Yeah.
And then to find that his name was kind of put in the frame, you know, not necessarily by the program makers, but by all the people who are speculating, I thought, yeah, that isn't such a bad shout. I mean, it doesn't tick any of the boxes that, you know, people want in terms of race or gender, but
it doesn't matter. It should be the best actor. That's what Chibnall said, and that's what I think we said last time.
Yeah, it should be. Yeah, the audition should be open to everybody,
anyone, and the best actor gets it.
Then pick, yeah. And if it happens to be him, then, you know, I think we could do worse.
Yeah.
So that's that's interesting. An email has flooded in, Bob.
What?
Yes.
Just going to get back on my chair, Jim. What?
Call the paramedics.
It's amazing.
Yes, it's from Jeff Waddle, who...
Ah, Jeff, legend.
...is a legendary feedbacker to much every Doctor Who podcast I've ever listened to. So
that's a great thing. Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks for including us as well. Jeff, shall I read what Jeff says?
Yes.
It's on the subject of another piece of news which has just come up, which I want to talk about anyway, so this is timely, I think. Jeff says, all I've waited for is the original Cybermen, and now it looks like we're getting them. I know people laugh at them, but I find them incredibly creepy, probably because they're half human and latterly have just been, to all intents and purposes, robots.
Yeah.
And I fail to see how they can bring the different ones together. Well, this is a bit spoilery, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all right, though.
Yeah, because, I mean, there have been images shown that have different versions of Cybermen all in the same place, sort of thing. Jeff says, I fail to see how they can bring the different ones together unless it's different universes merging together type of thing, which we've had before. And I'm not so keen on you-know-who being in charge of them, but we'll have to wait and see. Do you know what Jeff's referring to there?
Stephen Moffat?
Well, I don't think so, but I think he means Missy, because Missy's in this story as well.
Yeah, I kind of agree. The finale with her in charge of Cybermen was a bit lame.
Yeah, and this is going to be the finale with Cybermen and her in as well, so...
Yeah.
I don't really want a remake of that one, but let's hope they do something different. Anyway, to carry on with Jeff. I do, however, expect You Know Who to be an alternate version of You Know Who, and this has just been another example of Moffat trolling us with the whole gender swap thing.
Mm. Mm.
If it turns out to be an Asylum of the Daleks type mess of different factions working together, or that bloody awful cyber brig flies in to save the day, I swear I will send Moffat a bloody Western Warrior robot in the post.
Wow.
Those are Jeff's W's, not mine.
Good old Jeff.
And he ends rather delightfully with, keep up the good work. Wonderful chaps, both of you.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff. You're a wonderful chap for being our first feedbacker.
A little notification came up on my phone to a comment on our Proctor Who page. Guess who it is?
Jeff Waddle?
Yeah. Good lad, Jeff. Hello.
There you go.
So, I'm loving this idea of new Cybermen, slash not, you know, the old Cybermen, proper Cybermen, redone.
10th Planet Cybermen, aren't they?
The best Cybermen. And they look awesome.
Mm. They do. Yeah, they're very authentic. The lamps on the heads are smaller, but then I think they have to be.
Absolutely.
And the old accordion squeeze boxes in the front, I think it's slightly streamlined, but I mean, they're definitely 10th Planet Cybermen.
And they immediately look scarier.
They're so creepy, aren't they? I mean, I'm not quite sure how a modern audience who's never, you know, doesn't have our history with them would make them, particularly if the voice is going to be the same, which I can only assume they will be, if you've gone this far.
I think it'll be deeper. I think it'll have more of a deeper, low sort of frequency tone. Because yeah, I'm just thinking what would scare me is they'd just open their mouth and you didn't hear anything, just open, and then it comes out with quite a deep, like I said, sort of robotic tone. A bit like the 80s Cyberman voice.
Mm.
That'd be pretty weird. I'm looking forward to it. But it's going to be in the context, I reckon, of like Asylum of the Daleks or whatever in it, I think.
Yeah, there must be, I guess, a kind of convergence of timelines or something, because they're kind of, the pictures I've seen, there are Cybermen in there as well, which obviously from the alternative universe, although they did bleed into ours, didn't they?
Yes.
The pictures I've seen, I haven't seen any other than those two, so it may just be those two, I don't know.
Mm.
But... wonder if it's a kind of goodbye gift to Peter Capaldi, because he was talking about them from day one, wasn't he?
He wanted to tell us Mondas Cybermen, didn't he? So
he did, yeah. So, yeah, if that's a parting gift, because it is the two-part finale. Obviously, I think Capaldi's going to go in the Christmas special unless they pull a fast one on us.
Yeah.
But, you know, in terms of his general run as the Doctor, it could be a kind of goodbye gift. I must admit, I was really excited reading about this until I found out that Missy was going to be in the same story.
Well, yeah, but we'll see. We'll see what context it's in. We don't know anything yet, do we? So,
no, we don't. But we do know we had Simon and Missy before.
And it wasn't very good.
Well, I thought it was awful.
Mm.
And I don't like Missy. I just don't like the way these characters are portrayed. You know, her master or the one before her.
Yeah.
Johnson, I don't like Moriarty in Sherlock. I just don't like that style of villain. I think they're very boring.
That's because you're a miserable cockney git.
That's exactly why, actually. You put your finger right on it. But, yeah, I liked her slightly better on her second appearance in the Dalek story, but if she just tones it down a bit, because what I cannot stand is people looking like they're acting and looking like they're relishing their role,
yeah.
Which is okay in some things, but not... I don't like it in Doctor Who.
Makes it a bit panto, doesn't it?
Well, it does. And the danger is, of course, if she's in it, is the Cybermen will just be her stooges wandering around in the background. What I'd really like to see is, you know, those original Cybermen. As we've said before, what I'd really like is an origin story where we see the Cybermen and...
Spare parts.
Spare parts, for instance, yeah. Where we end up with the Cybermen by the end of it and we see how they get there. And this would seem like an opportunity to do that, but, you know, I kind of feeling... You know, I don't want to be like one of those people who decides what it's going to be and then complains about it before it's happened. But, you know, with Missy there, she's such a huge personality, you can't help feeling she'll be running the show.
I mean, I could understand the trepidation about it, because definitely that finale, the end of Series 8 with the combination that we're talking about, was pure. I was very angry about it at the time, as I reflected on Proctor Who.
I remember.
But we'll see. I don't think... I've just got high hopes. Well, yeah, I've got high hopes for Series 10. It's got to be great because it's Moffat's last hurrah. Mm. I think that's the sort of thing to it. The longest sort of showrunner or producer or whatever of Doctor Who pretty much ever. So, yeah, we will see. We will see, Jim.
We will see, but it'll be great just seeing them... Those Simon wondering about.
That'd be brilliant.
For matter how short it may be, or matter who their boss is during the story, it'll be good to see them.
Will be awesome.
And I think that they seem to have done a great job in reproducing them. So that's something to look forward to, among other things in the next series. I think that's one of the things to look forward to.
Yes, without a doubt.
Good. Well, is that us for this month?
Yeah, we've done a good natter tonight.
It's getting on for an hour, so yeah, that'll do us, I think.
Mm. And our listeners.
Yeah, I'm sure they've had to, they might have stopped half an hour.
Yeah, come back.
But yeah, if you want to follow Jeff's example and email us on any subject you like, really, we're at letterlords@mail.com.
Yeah, or you can tweet us or, you know, Facebook us or whatever. Twitter is, I'm at Boflem, B-O-F-L-E-M-I-N-G.
And I'm at Crinoid Podcast, K-R-Y-N-O-I-D Podcast. Yeah, get in touch, because, yeah, if we're the Letter Lords, we can talk about letters that have been sent to us, can't we? Not just the mail.
Yeah, that's a new thing, Jim, we're going to say. If you send us letters,
because we'll
we struggle with Doctor Who magazine, we will talk about your letters. How does that sound?
Yeah, it sounds good to me, anyway.
Excellent.
Good. Okay, so thanks very much for listening, and it's goodbye from me.
Yeah, it's a take care. Thank you very much from me.